every inch of his body still screaming bloody murder after... He could scarcely bring himself to think it. When he'd woken a scant hour before sunrise, cold and stiff on the weather chamber floor, his face crackling with dried blood and his fine shirt ruined, he'd snivelled like a spratling, a girl, so monstrous was his fear and confusion and dread. And now Gar wanted to talk about it. Well, he didn't. What was there to talk about? Nobody could ever know what had happened last night. They must never speak of it, not even when they were alone. That's what he'd tell Gar while they were out riding through the poxy countryside. And that would be the end of it. The horses were saddled and waiting in the stable yard. Matt was holding them, chatting with Gar. Seeing Asher, his eyebrows flew up and his lips pursed in a soundless whistle.
"I've seen healthier-looking drowned cats. What's amiss?"
Smoothly, Gar answered for him. "Asher is proving himself my most hard-working and loyal subject." Beneath the surface pleasantry, Asher saw he was brittle as sugar glass.
"That's our Asher," Matt agreed, handing over Balladare's reins. "Dedicated to a fault. Now you have a good ride, Your Majesty, and mind yourself, because he's feeling a bit fresh this morning."
Proving the point, Balladare humped and cow-kicked when Gar swung himself into the saddle, then bounded stiff-legged across the stable yard. As Gar fought to control him, gasping, Matt turned to Asher.
"You do look bloody awful," he said, grabbing hold of the offside stirrup leather to keep the saddle steady.
Asher pulled himself aboard his patient Signet and nodded his thanks as Matt slid his boot home in the stirrup iron.
"Too many meetings, not enough fresh air."
"Ready?" Gar called out, Balladare momentarily subdued. Matt stepped back, frowning.
"Come see me when you've done riding. We'll talk."
"I ain't got time for talking these days, less it be with poxy guildmeisters and the like," Asher replied, giving Signet a nudge with his heels.
Then he dredged up a smile, because Matt was looking right down in the mouth. "But thanks." And he followed Gar out of the yard. They cantered side by side for miles along the barren Blackwood Road, not speaking, until they reached the turning for Crasthead Moor. Gar kicked Balladare onto it, urging the stallion to go faster, faster. Standing in his stirrups, Signet's long silver mane flogging his face, Asher pounded in their wake. Under clean blue skies, with cold air whipping their cheeks to colour, they rode into the heart of desolation. When at last the rock-strewn moor spread bleakly in every direction, Gar lifted his hands and eased Balladare back to a canter, then a trot, then a walk, and finally a steaming halt. Panting, sweating, Asher gentled Signet to a standstill opposite, keeping his distance. A wary silence filled the space between them. When it became unbearable, Gar spoke. "We can't pretend it didn't happen." Asher blinked away wind-whipped tears.
"I can."
"No," said Gar, his expression as cold and remote as the moor. "You can't. You see, we have a problem."
"You reckon?"
he said, and laughed. A pluming of breath echoed his derision. Gar's gloved fingers tightened on his reins.
"If you laugh again, I'll pull you from your horse and beat your head to a bloody pulp with a rock."
He looked Gar up and down.
"You could try."
With a cry of frustration, Gar wheeled Balladare in a churning of mud and small stones. The horse snorted, resenting the rough treatment.
"Asher, don't. It doesn't help us."
He settled his gaze on the distant horizon.
"True. There's only one thing can help us. Me leaving."
Balladare pawed at the wet ground, grunting his impatience. Gar jerked the reins hard.
"You can't."
"I can," he said, fear stirring. "I will. I Asher, I've lost my magic.
Somewhere in the distance, a faintly crying curlew. Beneath him, Signet snorted and swished his tail. He cleared his throat.
I don't know what that means.
Gar's eyes were terrible.
Yes, you do. We both do. Gar the Magicless has returned.
That ain't possible.
A dreadful premonition was beating black wings about his head. He tried to fight it off with words.
You're just exhausted, imagining things.
Imagining things? Gar shouted. How dare you say so? How dare you after all I've lived through? Do you think I could forget what 24 years of barrenness felt like after a mere few weeks of magic? I am empty, Asher, devoid of all power and even its memory. Whereas you!
Asher flinched as Gar's furious glare burned him, jerking up his hands, closing his calves against Signet's sides. He backed the horse 2 paces.
Don't say it.
Gar was implacable. I must, and you must hear it.
No, I can't. You can't ask me, expect me.
But I can, Asher. I do. I may not in conscience be king any longer, but I'm still my father's son, custodian of his legacy, the last living link to House Torvig, caretakers of this kingdom for nearly 4 centuries. I have a duty, and I will fulfill it, regardless of the cost or consequences.
To you?
Asher laughed, unamused.
There ain't no cost or consequences to you. Cost and consequences are for ordinary folk like me and Tim and Spake.
Gar just looked at him. Last night, Asher, you made it rain. So don't you sit there and prate to me of ordinary folk. You are nothing but ordinary.
I am if I say I am.
At the tone of his voice, Signet tossed his head, ears pinned.
You think I want this? Magic? Ha! If there was a way to get rid of it right here and now, I would.
Really? Said Gar, taunting. Are you sure? Don't tell me you didn't feel magic's glory last night as well as its agony. I saw your face, Asher. I know exactly what you felt.
Shocked, speechless, shaking with outrage, he could only stare. The thin wind blew chill and bitter in his face, biting all the way to bone. Signet jittered, haunches swinging left and right, ready to bolt.
That ain't my fault. I never asked for it.
Gar's lip curled.
Maybe not, but you've got it.
And you're so jealous, you could spit, ain't you? Well, damn you, Gar,
he said at last, and wheeled Signet away. Gar spurred Balladair forward, blocking his escape.
I'm sorry,
he said harshly. His face was filled with a monstrous pain.
You must understand. I thought I was my father's son in more than name, but I'm not. Oh, Asher, don't you see? You have to help me. If it's discovered I've lost my magic, there'll be chaos. And if it's discovered I've found it, there'll be chaos anyway, not to mention an execution.
Gar shook his head. That won't happen.
Why?
He sneered.
Because you'll protect me?
Yes.
Ha! Like you protected Tim and Spake.
It was a low blow, but he didn't care. As Gar recoiled, silenced, he jerked Signet back a pace.
Don't ask me to use weather magic again, Gar. I can't do it. I can't.
Recovered, Gar ignored him.
Baal's wall cannot survive without it. And if the wall falls, this kingdom and all the innocent people in it will be destroyed. Is that what you want? I ain't the only one who can do it. There's Conroy Geralt for a start, and he's Dorinan. He's supposed to.
Gar's face twisted. Oh, yes,
King Conroyd, a thought to ice the blood. But there are others, too, with sleeping dreams of majesty. If my failure is made public, wild ambition will rule the day and will be wading hip-deep in blood before the week is out. Trust me, Asher, I'm an able historian and I know what the promise of power can do.
Asher's fists were clenched so hard on the reins that his gloved fingers were going numb.
So, don't tell me. Let me guess. You want to go on wearing the crown while I take care of the weather working? Is that the plan?
Garr looked him full in the face.
I'm desperate. Well, I ain't. And I ain't scraddled in the head neither. You'd never keep this secret, Garr. Sooner or later, folks'll notice you ain't doing magic in public anymore. There'll be talk, questions, polite at first, but in the end, there'll be demands. The truth'll come out, and when it does, I won't be the only oaken in strife. You can't ask me to put all my people at risk. You can't.
Silence. Garr stared again at the bleak and dreary moor. Asher, slowly freezing to his marrow, tucked his fingers into his armpits and waited. A sparrowhawk soared overhead, wings outstretched. Spying something amongst the grassy tussocks below, it abruptly halted, feathered wingtips snatching at the clear, bright air. A plummeting dive, a shriek of triumph, and it wheeled away again, death dangling from its talons. "You're right," said Garr at last, rousing from reverie. "We can't keep it a secret forever. But we can keep it secret for a month."
"And what good all that do?"
"Asher, your people weren't safe during Trevoil's schism. Hundreds died. And if the kingdom schisms again, hundreds more will join them. Maybe thousands this time. You can stop that. In a month, I should be able to read every medical and magical text we have to see if there's a cure for what afflicts me. There might even be something in Baal's lost library. I never got the chance to look through it completely."
"So you're saying there's a cure now?"
Garr shrugged.
"There might be. And if there ain't?"
Another shrug. "If by the end of a month I fail to find a remedy, or if Derm is still unconscious, or dead, and can be no help at all, I'll go to Conroyd and Holes. Tell them my magic has failed. Name Conroyd king and Holes the new master magician. Conroyd will receive the weather magic, undertake his first weather working, and then be publicly presented as king. No uncertainty, no schism, no death. A month. Rain and snow and blood. Magic."
"Don't wait," he said, his belly churning. "Do it now."
Garr shook his head.
"Not while there's even the slimmest hope I might still keep this kingdom from Conroyd." "Then choose someone else."
"There is no one else."
"Baal, bloody save me,"
he cried, and spun Signet about so he wouldn't have to look at Gar's quiet despair a moment longer.
"I wanted to be a fisherman, Garr. I wanted nought but a boat in the ocean and an open sunlit sky."
"And I wanted magic," said Garr. "Not every man gets what he wants, Asher. Most men just get what they're given." Asher stared over the moor, unwilling to trust his voice, afraid that a single word might shatter him entirely. Garr said distantly, "I was going to be married. I was going to be a father." "It's funny, isn't it? How you can tell yourself you don't want something so often, you actually begin to believe it."
Crasshead Moor blurred. Anguished, he blinked it clear again, found his voice.
"How can you ask me to do this?"
"How can I not?" said Garr. It was a demand, a plea, a millstone around his neck. He slipped his feet free of the stirrups and slid from the saddle, dropped his reins and walked away, head down, boots squelching in the wet. He'd always lived a dangerous life. A man went out at dawn, there was no saying he'd come back at sunset. fishing was an unchancy way to spend your days. He'd grown up with that, accepted that. He understood fishing. But this, how could he understand this? I got magic in my blood. Where had it come from? How did it get there? How do I get rid of it? One sip of weather magic had been enough. No man should have that much power, not for any reason, not even to do good. His bones still ached with the memory of it, with the glory and the pain. Behind him, the sound of boots thudding to the muddy ground, the slap and squelch of Gar approaching, a familiar frustrating presence at his back. He didn't turn around. What if I ain't the only one, Gar? What if there's other Oaken like me? Then I pray they stay safely hidden. I'm scared, he said, and felt his gloved hands become fists. So am I. Asher turned then, took a deep, hurting breath and let it out. Gar didn't look scared. His face was a mask, all feelings smothered. If this goes wrong... Gar shook his head. It won't. It might. And if it does... The mask slipped. Then they'll have to kill me too, Gar said. His voice was low and shaking. They'll have to kill me first. I swear it, Asher, on the bodies of my father and my mother and my poor misguided sister. They will have to kill me first. Stirring words, honestly meant. He wanted to believe them. Gar believed them. But was that enough? If the unthinkable happened and this mad scheme was discovered, would the oath of a magicless king be enough to save him? When he'd asked Gar's dead father how best he could help, this wasn't what he'd had in mind. Gar said quietly, Please, Asher, do this. I think our kingdom is doomed if you don't. For one long moment, he forgot how to breathe. A terrible interior pressure swelled and swelled, dancing black spots before his eyes and threatening to crush his lungs. The desolate moor smeared red and orange and gold. He flung away from his tormentor, his friend, his king. Bent double, closed resentful fingers around a wet grey rock, and hurled it into the melting distance. Hurled another, and another, and another, his bones vibrating with an incoherent rage. When he could stand it no longer, he opened his mouth and screamed, bellowed, vented all his fear and fury into the wide, uncaring sky, and then stood there, his head bowed to his chest, emptied and resigned. Gar's gentle hand came to rest on his shoulder. Thank you, Asher. I promise you won't regret it. The return ride from the moor to the tower stables was completed in silence. Back in the stable yard, Gar threw Balladare's reins to young Booth and walked away. Asher watched him go, not the least sorry they were to be separated for a while. He needed time to think. Jimmel offered to take care of Signet, but Asher refused. Good, honest labour, that's what he was after. Distraction and sweat born of muscles, not magic. He returned Signet to his stable, untacked him, then collected a spare grooming box and busied himself with the soothing task of making the silver stallion beautiful. Solitude didn't last long.
Have a good ride, then?
Matt asked, leaning over the stable's closed half-door. He glanced up from untangling Signet's tail, hair by hair. Aye.
You should go out more often. Signet needs the exercise, and you need the fresh air.
Aye, but when? Ain't enough hours in the day as it is.
Early, suggested Matt. Before breakfast. It'll give you an appetite.
Give me a heart spasm more like, he said, briefly grinning. Matt frowned.
That's not funny. Asher, what's wrong?
He freed the last tingle in Signet's tail
and reached for a dandy brush. Nout.
Why don't I believe you?
Damn. Too sharp by half was Matt. He made himself look up. Nout, you can help with.
It's a big job you've taken on. This hulking administrating, Matt said after a moment. Before, you could hide in the prince's shadow. Now he's king and you're in full sunlight. If you're not careful, you could get burned.
An observation too close for comfort. He swapped the dandy brush for a soft bristled body brush and started scrubbing at the dried mud on Signet's flanks. The horse swished its immaculate tail and he thumped its rump in warning. I'll be fine.
I'm sure you will, said Matt, looking unhappy. Just mind your step, will you? Don't do anything stupid.
What, like make it rain? To hide the thought, he swapped sides from Signet's left flank to his right. Fuss, 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 ain't you got work to do? Matt slapped the stable door.
Yes, I just wanted to tell you the horses to pull the royal hearse arrives sometime today.
His Majesty will want to inspect them. Let me know when they get here.
Of course, said Matt.
Alone again, Asher indulged himself in another half hour of horse primping, then surrendered to the promptings of duty and returned to the tower, where Darren was waiting, armed with a 4-foot-high stack of legal books and an evil smile. In his weaker, less horrible moments, Asher found himself wishing that Darren had, all right, maybe not died, but remained ill enough after his collapse for Nyx to have made him retire to the country, at the other end of the kingdom, and forbidden him long carriage rides.
You got to be bloody joking, he said, stopping in his office's open doorway. And that's my desk you're sitting at, in case you hadn't noticed.
Darren unfolded himself from the chair.
I've taken the liberty of conferring with Lady Marna. Given the vexatious nature of the dispute between Indigo Glossbottle and his guild brethren, and despite the fact you're a jurisprudential ignoramus, we thought it wise to gazette the hearings for early next week. That's after the funeral, and should give me enough time to prepare you adequately. He sniffed. Now kindly take a seat. We have a great deal of work to get through before...
Asher slouched into his office.
Not we, me. I can read, Darren, and I don't need you turning the pages for me. If I run into trouble, I'll ask Gar.
Darren's eyebrows lifted.
You can't possibly bother His Majesty at a time like this. I will.
Mind your own business, he said,
and tugged Darren out from behind the desk.
He's burying his family this Barl's Day, Darren. Don't you reckon he might welcome something else to think on?
An expression of grudging acknowledgement crossed Darren's face as he pulled his arm free.
Perhaps.
Glad you agree. Now, if there ain't anything else...
There is. Apparently, there are several matters pending at Justice Hall that require the attentions of a master magician. Lady Marna feels the issue is becoming... urgent. If you could mention as much to the king...
Coward.
Aye, he said, and sat down.
I'll mention it. Now close the door on your way out.
Alone at last, he eyed the pile of legal books with weary distaste. After the madness of Crasthead Moor, he couldn't be less interested in Glossbottle's pissy piss problems.
Baal, save me. What have I done?
The office door opened, admitting Daphne.
I finally settled that business with the midwives, she said, hanging her cloak and satchel on the corner coat rack. I doubt we'll have any more trouble now.
He couldn't remember what the problem was, but smiled anyway.
Fine.
Oh, and His Majesty asked me to give you this.
He leaned across his desk and took the note she held out to him, cracked the crimson wax seal and read it. See me. The crypt. 2 hours after sunset.
Baal, save him, what now? What else could there be for him to sacrifice on the altar of Gar's desperate dedication to Lur?
Daphne was watching him closely.
Trouble?
No, he lied, sliding the note into his pocket. She dropped into the chair opposite his desk and nodded at the pile of books Darren had left behind.
A little light reading?
More like a recipe for headaches, he said, and let himself look at her, just look at her. Since joining the Tower staff, she'd unwillingly exchanged her comfortable bookseller cottons and linens for the stiffer formality of silk and brocade. The expensive fabric suited her, brought out the sheen in her thick black hair, and softened her lean angularity. Damn, she was so beautiful, even when she was frowning.
You've got a headache now, haven't you?
He rubbed his throbbing temple. Does it show?
Only to me.
Returning to her satchel, she rummaged for a moment and withdrew a small stoppered pot.
No potions, he protested. You're as bad as bloody Nick's. Just you keep away from me with that muck.
Affectionately scornful, she moved to stand behind him.
Gossoon, it's a salve, not a potion. Now be quiet.
The smell from the pot as she unstoppered it was almost pleasant, hinting at mint leaves and honey and other things unknown, but soothing to the senses. Her ointment-smeared touch on his skin was a benediction, a tingling taste of what could be, should be, would be, if fate just once was kind. Kneading, stroking, her strong and supple fingers smoothed his temples, his neck, slipped inside his shirt collar to flirt with his shoulders.
You're so tense, she murmured. No wonder you've got pains.
He sighed and let his head fall back to rest against her blue brocade chest, soft and welcoming, a pillow long desired. Her fingers roamed freely, wandered upwards to dally through his hair.
You'll make me smelly, he complained,
drowsy and only a little serious.
Like that pissant Willa.
A soft chuckle, slender fingers waking fire.
Baal forbid. Now.
A sharp rat-tat of knuckles on the office door.
Asher, said Matt, barging in. Those horses are... Oh.
Foolishly, he stood in the middle of the office, staring, and foolishly, Asher stared back. Behind him, he could feel Daphne stiffen.
Asher's busy, Matt, she said.
All amusement fled from her voice.
Go away.
Busy.
Said Matt, still staring.
Yes, I can see that.
Asher sat forward, a tide of heat washing through him. I had a headache. Daphne was helping. The strangest look passed over Matt's abruptly pale face.
Yes, well, she's a very helpful woman.
Matt, said Daphne sharply. Don't you?
Asher raised one finger and she fell silent. A miracle of sorts. He stood, stared Matt full in the face.
That'll do.
Horses in good fettle? Matt nodded.
They are.
Good. The king'll come see him directly. Anything else?
No.
Fine. Then you can go. Another nod.
Very good. Sir.
Daphne broke the awkward silence Matt left in his wake.
I should go. More meetings, you know how it is. I'll leave the ointment here, shall I? You can rub it in yourself if the pain returns.
No,
he wanted to cry.
Stay. Tell me what you meant by this. Tell me I ain't dreaming. Tell me if you felt what I felt when you touched me.
All right, he said. You have any trouble, you let me know. I got to make a start on these bloody legal books. Her smile was fleeting and impish.
Good luck. If I finish my meetings in time, I'll help you with them, shall I?
He shrugged.
If you like. No promises, mind, she warned.
No promises. For some reason, the comment made him shiver. Chapter 14.
The day dragged on, and at long last died in a fiery sunset. Daphne didn't come back. He wasn't hungry, but he ate dinner anyway. Clooney would read him a lecture if he didn't, then for good measure badger the cook into serving him a dessert of offended complaints and insulted imprecations. He didn't have the stomach or the energy to hear them. His headache had returned with a vengeance. See me. Hiding in his private sitting room, he stared through the uncurtained window and watched the world outside dwindle into dusk, into darkness. Even the glow of Baal's wall seemed faded, tarnished. Or was that just fear, pulling a deadening veil across his eyes? See me. When it was time, he fetched a coat from his wardrobe, shrugged it on, and let himself out of his apartments. The tower was hushed. The faintest murmuring of voices drifted downwards from the staircase over his head, Clooney and her hard-working housemaid friends tending the stairwell candles. A door banged. Someone laughed. Someone else shouted two floors down, sounding disgruntled. He thought it was Willa. With a sigh, needing support, he took hold of the handrail and began his reluctant descent, slipped unseen from the tower, and made his way to the palace grounds. Gar was outside the crypt, holding a candle lantern and looking annoyed. At last! 2 hours, I said. Have you forgotten how to count? I ain't that late. Late enough. Come on. He pushed open the crypt door and went inside. Asher stared after him, apprehension like a sea swell rising to swamp all other harsher emotions. Then he followed. In the royal family's chamber, 3 more candle lanterns had been lit and placed around the small, chilly room. Flickering shadows danced up the white walls and over the flagstone floor. Balanced on Bourne's incomplete effigy was a creamy white globe. What's that thing? Gar glanced at it. The weather orb. Come in, would you? Fascinated, repelled, Asher took half a step closer. There's colours in there. That's the weather magic, said Gar, withdrawing a battered, ancient-looking book from a satchel on the floor. Asher nodded at it. And what's that? A collection of spells and incantations specific to the role of Master Magician. I took it and the orb from Derm's study this afternoon. The rest of his books and papers are being boxed up and delivered to the tower tonight. 1 month isn't long, Asher. I don't intend to waste a minute of it. He felt his guts cramp. So you pinched Derm's stuff? What's that got to do with me?
Everything, said Gar impatient. If you're going to preserve Baal's wall, you have to take on her weather magics. Or try to, anyway. I've no idea if the transference will work with you saying it instead of a master magician. I've no idea if it'll work on you at all, given your oaken. Still, we don't have a choice. The attempt must be made, and in secret. Hence us meeting here.
Mouth dry, heart racing, he stared at the orb.
And if this transference don't work, what happens to me?
Gar shrugged.
I don't know that either, but these magics come from Baal herself. I can't believe she'd let them hurt someone, kill them.
Beneath the fear, a spark of anger.
She's 6 centuries dead, Gar, and you never knew her. You got no idea what she would or wouldn't let happen.
Gar frowned at the floor, then looked up.
Are you having second thoughts?
Wouldn't you?
Probably.
He tried to smile.
What about third? Asher? Ah, oh, sink it, he said, and scrubbed a hand across his face. Let's just get it over with, eh?
Gar nodded.
Agreed.
They sat facing each other on the flagstones. Gar held the weather orb and balanced the open spellbook in his lap.
It's only fair to warn you. This might hurt.
He rolled his eyes.
Now he tells me. Since you can't read ancient Doranan, I'll recite the spell and you can repeat it after me. If what happened in the weather chamber holds true, that should trigger the transference.
And if it don't?
A wintry amusement touched Gar's face. Then it's Hail King Conroyd. Asher glared at the pretty pearl-white weather orb. Hurt how much, exactly?
I survived, said Gar, and gave him the orb.
It felt peculiarly heavy, almost alive, or aware. The colours swirling beneath its skin made his senses swim. Without conscious thought, his fingers formed a cradle.
That's right, said Gar. Hold it just like that. No tighter, no looser. Close your eyes.
Breathe.
Good.
Now, are you ready? Asher felt the crypt's cold air catch in his throat.
Ready? No, he wasn't bloody ready. How could anybody be ready for something like this?
He grunted.
All right, said Gar softly.
There was a rustling of pages, a slithering of leather as he picked up Derm's book.
Repeat after me.
Harak dolani maketh. Heart booming, head spinning. Asher licked his dry lips and repeated the tongue-twisting words.
Harak dolani maketh.
As he whispered the last syllable, the orb trembled in his grasp. He felt warmth, a humming energy. He opened his eyes, stared down at the maelstrom of gold and green and purple and crimson magics he held between his hands, and fell headlong into it. From some impossible distance he heard Gar's voice, and he echoed it, repeating the words he had no hope of understanding. Deep within, some secret place he never knew existed seemed to open, unfold, the way a rose unfolds its petals at the first kind kiss of the sun. The orb was glowing so brightly he shouldn't have been able to look at it, but he could. He could see right into the heart of it, and it felt like staring into the heart of magic itself. Images poured into the newly opened space within him, and with him came words. Knowledge.
Power.
He could feel his chest heaving, his breath rasping. The orb's heat and light burst free of their shell, rushed through his skin like hot, sweet wine through cheesecloth, and now he was the orb, glowing with magic. His bones were burning with it, and the world had turned crimson and gold. There was no pain. Gar was still speaking. Standing on the rim of this brand new world, he could hear his friend's voice, drifting towards him from a vast distance. He let the words float into his ambit, breathed them in and breathed them out again, as though they were incense or the smoke from one of Daphne's scented candles. The power pouring into him swelled like a wave racing in from the ocean, deep and strong and impossible to control. He felt like a child again. Remembered the time Da tossed him over the side of their fishing boat and into the water so he'd learn how to swim.
Don't fight her, boy. You'll never win. Let go. Just let go. She'll hold you like a woman if you let her. Let go.
He let go now as he had then. Let the wave of power take him, lift him, drag him deep under and throw him up high. He heard himself cry out, a sound of wonder and despair. A fountain of words welled into his mouth and he shouted them for all the world to hear. A final surge of magic speared him like a javelin of fire. For one brief, exulting moment he knew himself invincible. And then the fire faded. The power snuffed out like a pinched candle. He was a man again, not magic made flesh, and the orb in his trembling hands was nothing more than a bauble.
he could have wept. When at last he stirred, Gar was staring at him as though they'd never met. "There was no pain for you, was there?" He shook his head. Slowly awareness returned. That was a lantern. He sat on the floor. Above him lay the quiet stone faces of dead people. He felt light enough to fly, weighed down with impossible knowledge. "Do you know that at the end you were saying the last words of the transference spell with me, not after me?" Carefully, he returned the orb to Gar.
"If you say so. I can't remember. It's a blur."
Gar stood. His face was cold, all emotion smothered like a river under ice. "There's one more thing we have to do." He slumped against the nearest coffin, groaning.
"What? Gar, I don't want to do anything else. Not tonight. I'm knackered. All my insides are turned upside down and my head's near to bursting open. There's so much stuff been crammed in it."
Gar's answer was to look in his satchel and remove a small pottery bowl filled with damp soil. "There's a seed in here," he said, holding it out. "Make it sprout."
"Make it sprout?"
Asher stared.
"Why?"
"As a test. We need to be sure the transference worked."
"I ain't a bloody gardener. I don't know how to..."
"Yes, you do," said Gar, leaned down, grabbed him by one arm and hauled him to his feet.
"It's in you now, as it once was in me."
"Ow, leave off," he protested, as Gar tapped him ungently on the side of the head to make his point. "Just think of the seed, Asher. Imagine it bursting into life. Magic will do the rest." Scowling, he snatched the dirt-filled bowl and glared into it. His mind was blank.
"Think of the seed."
He held his breath, screwed up his face, and imagined green and growing things. Words floated to the surface of his mind and flirted there like sea foam on the ocean.
"Talaneth vo susura, susura, susura."
He parted his lips and let them escape. Melting heat. A javelin of fire, a flaring of crimson and gold. The bowl vibrated. Even as he gasped in pain, felt something warm and wet trickle from his nostrils and over his lips. The moist dirt shivered, shimmered, erupted like a waterspout. Something slender and green unfolded from the dark earth, leapt to life in a riot of yellow and blue. He cried out. His fingers lost their tenuous hold of the bowl, let it slip and fall. It shattered on the crypt's stone floor, spilling dirt, spitting shards of clay. The flower he'd given birth to kept growing. Breathless and disbelieving, he watched as its stem broadened, budded, as the buds opened, as the blue and yellow petals uncurled and doused the air with perfume. As its tangle of roots tangled further, at long last it stopped growing and instead lay like a miracle at his feet.
"Baal, save me," breathed Gar. "Germinate the seed, I said, not turn the crypt into a greenhouse."
He shook his head in wonder and envy.
"Who are you, Asher? What are you?"
Asher stared at the flower. Feeling such a brangle of things, fear, elation, horror, joy, that for a moment he forgot how to speak.
"You're the history student," he said when his tongue at last obeyed him. "You tell me."
Gar's face tightened. "I wish I could." He busied himself collecting the orb and the book and stowing them safely back in the satchel. Turned then to picking up the shards of broken pottery and putting them in there too. His movements were savagely self-controlled. Asher bent to help him. Gar struck his hand away. I'm not helpless. He stepped back.
I never said you were.
But you thought it.
I never did.
Gar. Helpless, useless, defective. On the last word, Gar's voice cracked. His face twisted and he turned away. Knotted with unwanted sympathy, all Asher could do was wait. Gone was the proud and powerful king who'd walked amongst his people in the market square, comforting and being comforted, wearing his magical birthright like a mantle of crimson and gold. In that man's place, this born-again cripple, brought low by grief and fate and a bewildered anger that his life could take such an unkind turn, that against every belief and expectation, an Ulkan could possess the magic he'd longed for so passionately all his life, that had manifested without warning, then deserted him without rhyme or reason, leaving him emptied, hollowed, not even a shadow of his other, grander self. At long last, Gar regained his self-control. I'm sorry. Asher patted Gar's shoulder, feeling awkward.
Don't be.
It's late. We should go. But first... Painfully, Gar looked at his father's mutilated marble face. The effigy. If I gave you the incantation, would you... I don't want anyone to see. It's dangerous. For both of us. And disrespectful to him. Asher sighed. He didn't want to. The less magic he used, the happier he'd be. But... He let Gar give him the words he needed and remolded Bourne's disfigured features as though they were made of butter, not marble. Then he banished the spilled dirt and the riotous plant he'd created into the woods that ringed the crypt. Thank you, said Gar, subdued, withdrawn. I'm grateful.
Prove it, he said. Find me a way out of this.
Gar nodded, touched his fingertips to his father's perfect effigy. I'll try. Deaf to all of Darren's entreaties, Gar had decided upon a private interment for his family. 6 sober city guards removed the bodies from the palace's east wing, watched by Conroy Geralt, members of the General Council, Pellin Auric, and a host of palace and tower staff who'd gathered in silent respect on the lawn bordering the gravel driveway. Asher, standing with Daphne and Darren and Willa, chewed on his lip and bullied his face into some semblance of stern discipline. Bloody funerals. He hated them. He and Daphne had attended coachman matches 4 days after the accident as official representatives of the king, and what a weeping and a wailing that had been. The dreams he'd had that night, his mother's funeral, his father's death, and the funeral he'd been denied. Poor addled Jed, as good as dead. Now this. Holes walked behind the sad procession of coffins, weighted down with his most ornate robes of office, offering his prayers for the dead royals in a clear, carrying voice. Beside him walked Gar, silent, swathed head to toe in deepest black. For the first time since his ascension to the throne, his clothes were embroidered with the sword and thunderbolt symbol of House Torvik. On his collar points, his shirt cuffs, and over his heart. Another battle with Darren that had been. One Gar had wisely lost. The reigning monarch always wore his or her house insignia. Always. Even if it did make him feel like a fraud. As the lowering sun threw shadows across the surrounding gardens, Pellin's boy slid the 3 coffins neatly into the back of the glossy black hearse, closed its rear doors, then fell into place well behind Gar and Holes. Matt picked up the black horse's reins and his whip, and soberly moved away from the palace, down the tree-lined drive that would lead them eventually to the crypt.
equally sober, Gar, Holes, and the guards followed in its wake. Holes was still praying. As soon as they were gone from sight, sobs broke out amongst the crowd. Asher glanced around, saw weeping Ulkin, weeping Dorinan. Not Geralt, of course. Even if he was genuinely grieved, he'd never lower himself to show it in public. But the Dorinan members of the General Council, they seemed not to have such scruples. They grieved without reservation, as did the Ulkin Guild leaders. There were even tears on Pelin's cheeks. Of course, the royal staff were awash with misery. Beside him, Willa had surrendered to soggy hiccups, and Darren was practically howling into his handkerchief. Daphne, her eyes bright, touched his sleeve.
"They're sheep in search of a shepherd, Asher. You should say something."
He didn't want to. Hated drawing attention to himself, especially with Conroy Geralt watching. But she was right, and Darren was in no fit state, blubbering like a baby. "My lords and ladies, good guildmeisters and mistresses, gentlefolk all," he called, raising a hand to attract their attention. "This sad day sees the end of an era in our kingdom. As His Majesty goes to bid his private farewells, let us remove to the palace's hall of meetings to partake of refreshments and shared memories in honour of King Born, Queen Dana, and the Princess Fane." A moment of surprised silence, of exchanged looks and lifted eyebrows. Then those nearest the palace began to drift towards it. Darren, damply composed now, plucked at his elbow.
"That was well said, Asher. Very well said indeed."
"You sound surprised." Darren's chin lifted.
"I am. Now, Asher," said Conroy Geralt, suddenly at his elbow and icily civil. "A word."
He bowed.
"Of course, my lord. In private."
"Certainly." He turned to Daphne. "I'll see you inside." She withdrew, taking Darren and Willa with her, and sparing him a swift, sympathetic smile over her shoulder. He didn't dare acknowledge it. Instead, he surrendered to Geralt's frigid scrutiny. Contemptuous of social niceties, Geralt said,
"When does the king intend to appoint his new master magician?"
"My lord, he has one already." Geralt's colour heightened.
"Derm is nothing but a breathing carcass."
His voice was pitched low, for intimacy.
"And Gar's sentimental attachment to him places all of us in danger. You have his ear, fisherman. Bend it. Advise our king that further delay in the matter of Derm's replacement will lead to questions I'm sure he'd prefer weren't asked."
Asher clasped his hands behind his back, so Geralt wouldn't see fists.
"Is that a threat?"
"A warning," said Geralt, and smiled. "I will not see this kingdom imperiled by a boy whose judgment has already proven questionable. He gave an undertaking before witnesses that this matter would be resolved."
"And it will be, my lord. In his time, not yours."
The smile widened.
"Indeed. But time is not infinite. Time runs out. Listen carefully, Meister Administrator. That sound you hear is the swift approach of a last chance."
"Bastard. Bastard."
Asher manufactured a smile of his own.
"Really? Seems more to me like the sound of a man putting a noose round his own neck."
Geralt laughed.
"Were I you, Asher, I'd not be so swift to speak of nooses and necks. You have my warning. Do with it what you will, and be prepared to reap the consequences."
Fighting nausea, he watched Geralt saunter across the manicured lawn and into the palace.
It was some time before he could bring himself to follow. Flickered by candlelight, Gar listened to Holzer's footsteps retreating, to the crypt's inner door banging closed, to the faint echoes of the heavy brass-bound outer door booming shut. He crossed the small, crowded chamber and pushed its heavy oak door until it thudded home against the jamb. Then he turned and slumped against it. So, here we are then. Alone at last. Someone giggled. After a startled moment, he realized it was him. He slapped a hand across his mouth to stifle the shocking sound. The cold stone coffins, full-bellied now with bodies, graced with those beautiful marble effigies, sat silent before him. I won't stay long, he said after a little while. I know you want to sleep. It's just, there's something I'd like to ask you. Just a little matter I'd like to see cleared up. Now that you're safely here in your new home, and we're sure not to be overheard. You don't mind, do you? No, I didn't think you would. With an effort, he pushed himself away from the door. The chamber shimmered softly in the candlelight. No glimfire now, not unless he asked Asher to conjure it for him. He felt his guts twist. Like a child running to its nurse for sweetmeats. Please, Asher, may I have some glimfire? Please, Asher, can you make it rain? Fane's stony sweet face mocked him, and all his rage broke free. I don't understand it, he shouted at them. Did you know this could happen? Asher made it rain. He made it snow. He fixed your face, father, and you'd have me repay him with death? Unmoved, unmoving, his father's face slept in the gently flickering light. I helped you murder Timon Spake. I forced Asher to watch. Why? To make sure we maintained our stranglehold on power in this land? To keep the Olkhan ignorant of their magic? To continue this shameful legacy of lies and deception? We didn't save Lur. We stole it. Conquered it. Somehow managed to bury the truth of the Olkhan's own magical birthright. Robbed them of their heritage and history. Do you know what that makes me? The inheritor of a criminal crown, no better than the monster Morg. No one answered him. And now we are punished. I am punished. What do I do next? How do I proceed? My magic is extinguished, vanished as though it had never existed. Derm remains unconscious, teetering still on the brink of death, and Conroyd... He took a deep, shuddering breath. Conroyd is circling and he won't wait forever. All that stands between your kingdom and disaster, father, is an uneducated Olkhan fisherman. How did this happen? Why did it happen? Tell me, please. What does it mean? His anguish echoed in the small stone chamber, bounced from wall to floor to ceiling in concentric circles of grief. Flinging himself to the floor beside his mother's coffin, he seized her cold stone shoulders in his hands and willed her spirit to hear him. Mama, Mama, I grew to manhood watching you treat everyone you met with grace and courtesy, no matter who they were or how they lived. Baker, butcher, nobleman or nurse, Doranan or Olkhan, they were all the same to you. Everything I know of living Baal's legacy, of honouring her teachings and upholding her laws, I learned from you. And now I've learned it was likely all a lie. So what do I do now, Mama? Guide me, I beg you. I swore an oath to protect this kingdom and its sacred laws with my life. If I hold true to that oath, I have to kill Asher.
and in killing him I'll kill our kingdom with him. So no matter what I do, I'm forsworn. Is that what you want from me?"
Releasing his mother, he turned again to Bourne. "You were never ambitious for ambition's sake. If you'd wanted this kingdom's future placed in Conroy's hands, if you'd trusted he'd do it right by all the people, not just our own, you never would have bullied the councils into giving you Fane. You'd have named him heir, to us if not to the population. But you didn't. I know you don't want me to abdicate. I know you don't want Conroy as king." He stared into his father's marble features, searching for answers, for hope. "I suppose I could be wrong. It could be that Asher is the only Olkin who can do magic. And if that's so, isn't it some kind of miracle? That he's with me now in my darkest hour? Doesn't it mean he was born special for a reason? Don't I have to keep him secret and safe, even if it means breaking Baal's law myself?" He glanced over at Fane. "I know what you'd do, sister dear," he said derisive. "You'd say the risk was too great. You'd round up every last Olkin and put them in prison, or send them to the axe just in case he's not the only one. You'd say it was what Baal wanted, but I won't believe that. How can he be Baal's enemy, our enemy, and also be the key to the kingdom's survival?" Fane stayed silent. She always did when the questions proved not to her liking. Exhausted, he let his body slump against her coffin. His head was aching badly. "And if Derm does wake, what then? Where will his loyalty lie? With Baal? The kingdom? With the memory of a dead king he loved like a brother? Or with the crippled failure his friend left behind as heir?" He pressed his hands to his face. "I'm so tired, father," he whispered. "I'm confused, afraid. I've no one to talk to. Asher's the only man I can trust now, and he's more frightened than me. Baal, save me. I wish you were here. I wish I knew what you wanted me to do. What you would do." His father didn't answer, which might have meant any number of things. At length, chilled and hungry and empty of answers, he returned to the tower, where, mercifully, people left him alone. After a half-hearted meal, he crawled into bed, fell asleep, and dreamed of Fane, laughing, of a scarlet sky bleeding red rain, of the wall's demise. Try as he might, he couldn't wake. Chapter 15. Partha Nix sat in an easy chair, rereading his notes on the applied uses of laurel seeds, a peculiar piece of flora laurel, good for gangrene and bloody flux.